not least, everything you wanted to know about NIMDA. I think that's the nature of the game here.
Well, we're not going to discuss the ins and outs of NIMDA so much as getting rid of NIMDA from a machine that's attacking you, defending yourself against an attacking machine by neutralizing the worm.
Neutralize NIMDA.
An automated strike back.
All right. Well, Tim Mullen from Anchor IS is going to tell you all about that. He's got his fellow homies here, Keith and Ryan, that'll be working the keyboard. And let's have a big welcome for him. And enjoy.
Good afternoon. I know we're running a little bit late. I want to thank you guys for coming out. This should actually be kind of fun. My name is Tim Mullen. I work for a company called Anchor IS. We design secure accounting software. They make me say that. So, I also write a column for Security Focus. I write the Microsoft column. And I do a little bit of security research at a little co-op we call Hammer of God. So that's my deal. This is Keith. He's going to be assisting me. He's from Black Hat, and the infamous Ryan from Security Focus. I talked him into being a switcher for me.
Did that be like some business cards?
Yeah, right there. Oh, see, and I thought you were coming to see my thing. Okay. First thing I want to do is kind of the nature of what we're talking about today is obviously quite charged. You know, we're talking about neutralizing NIMDA via an automated strike back. This is almost of a religious war for some folks. Some people are very highly charged about the things that we're going to be talking about doing. What we'll be doing now could be considered illegal by many people. So I want to let you know that I'm not condoning, yeah, particularly that guy. I'm not condoning, I am not suggesting that you run out and do this. The purpose of this demonstration is to bring to the forefront some techniques and some technology that I think that we can use to mitigate worms. I'm not a lawyer. We'll be talking about some legal interpretation here of some written law. I've had some attorneys provide me with some information. I've gotten documentation. I consider the sources to be reliable. Of course, I'm not going to guarantee any of that. Nothing in this is legal advice. Don't say, oh, Tim said it's legal, so I'm going to go do it. Or you can say that, but it ain't going to do you no good. And lastly, I'm just doing this as me. This isn't Anchor IS. It is Hammer of God. But, you know, the standard disclaimers. It's almost been a year where, I guess it was the week after 9/11, that NIMDA was first launched. And we continue to see many log entries of NIMDA attacking our systems. There are patches available. Patches were available before it started to propagate. There are procedures out there to remove it, patches for it from an antivirus standpoint, patches for the vulnerabilities that it uses. Yet we continue to see this stuff. I think that in the arena of law, that not enough consideration is made for what our rights are when it comes to defending our machines from an attack. In an article I recently wrote, I explained that if I was to sit down at my computer and type in the series of requests, the commands that NIMDA executes, if I did that against a box, I could be charged with a felony. However, if the attacking box, if an administrator doesn't secure his machine and that box does the exact same thing to me, nobody, you know, he's an innocent victim. I don't think that's necessarily right. What we've done is designed an automated strike back tool that will allow us to neutralize an attacking box. This isn't new technology. The idea really isn't new, but I think some of the ways that we're trying to approach this in a responsible manner are new. So later on, we're going to illustrate the technical way that that happens. But before that, let's just kind of talk about how we're going to go about that and bring up some of the legal, moral, ethical issues with that. The problem, NIMDA continues to spread. It's not as bad as it was, but it's still bad. In some areas, it's worse than others. Regardless of the publications, how to secure your system, the availability of the patches and what have you, it continues to spread. In my experience, administrators that you notify of being infected seem to either ignore your requests or actually get pissed off at you when you tell them. You know, it's like, it's not my job, leave me alone, hang up on you. ISPs take no responsibility. You know, and I don't think that they necessarily should. I mean, the ISP has a tough enough job as it is. Look at the ISPs that have gone out of business. WorldCom's declared bankruptcy, right? Many of the cable companies, many of the DSL companies. You know, I think if we were to require the ISP to handle the administrative burden of maintaining legitimate black hole lists, or to call them and have them talk to their customers, I don't think that's necessarily reasonable. And they're not doing it now anyway, even if it was. These systems also advertise their presence, right? Very, very loudly and repeatedly. Anyone with the malicious intent of doing so would be able to very easily maintain a list of infected systems that they could then, on their own, root, patch, and have in standby mode for some future attack. It could be automated just like mine is, but it could be sitting there waiting to be the zombie in a DDoS or something like that. I mean, I know people who maintain lists. I mean, it's being done. There's also an incredible amount of bandwidth utilization being wasted. We'll talk about some more of these arguments, but obviously every command, every GET request, every packet that transverses the internet because of NIMDA wastes bandwidth. It costs me more money to make my systems available at the level that they were available before these worms started to propagate. And it costs us time and money. And if that weren't enough, it costs us time and money, you know? And it's my bandwidth, you know? I mean, I'm the one who pays for this. I know NIMDA is not a 100% bandwidth sucking monster, but enough bandwidth is wasted that it comes to my attention. And enough bandwidth is wasted that we've had to consider buying upgraded equipment to be able to handle black hole lists and things of that nature. We shouldn't have to do that. You're really good. So we've started some lists. We've talked to people about some of the things we can do about this. Some of the proposed actions that different people have recommended in conversation and through, like, the vulnerability list at Security Focus. People say to contact the administrators. Report attacks to the ISP and use things like Jay Dyson's Early Bird in combination with D-Shield, or not in combination with, but use D-Shield as well. Viable things to do. Some people have gone so far as to recommend software have built-in entropy. There was an article in Security Focus that John Lasser did talking about if a system is not updated within a certain period of time, that it automatically shuts itself down. People also think that auto magic updates are the solution, making the software automatically go out and update itself so as the vulnerability vectors are patched. Some people say to ignore it and get on with life. Right? They say, you know, you're not susceptible to the attack, why are you worried about it? You're just making noise. Shut up and get on with it. Some people say to install the big patch, which is to switch to Linux, so as a lot of these worms and vulnerabilities, you know, would be less of a threat. We see that that's not necessarily the case, but it's certainly an option. Some have said to publish the IP addresses of these people so we could use those IPs, those published addresses, as some sort of automated black holing in our routers. That's an interesting concept. Some have launched anti-worms like Code Green. Somebody told me Code Blue was the anti-worm. Code Green is the anti-worm, correct? Thank you. And others, of course, say hack the guy. Go in, own the system, do whatever you want. There's some problems with a lot of these. As we said earlier, the administrators, no response or hostile response. There's also poor administrative contacts, the records that they keep. It's hard to get in touch with them in the first place. Emails to postmaster@domain.com come back returned. All manner of things like that. Same with the ISP. Of course, the ISP has even less of a concern. You know, it's not their problem. They're trying to get on with their life. They're trying to be profitable. Early Bird and DShield, I think, require even more bandwidth. You know, we're sending out all of these emails. It requires administrative. It requires administrative interaction. It's things that we have to do. And also to black hole the IPs. People say, just black hole them. Well, that doesn't do any good at my network interface. It's still eating up the bandwidth to get to my router to where I can drop it. I could co-locate at my ISP. That's going to cost me even more money. I could drop it at the network interface on the other side. That'd probably be fine. But again, it ends up costing me more money. The OS level solutions, you know, nobody's ever going to purchase a product that automatically shuts itself off if you don't update it. I don't think anybody would ever do that. It takes control away from us as administrators. And it's going to be a long time before we trust a vendor to automatically and silently install updates, right? Many of us have loaded patches, hot fixes that break other pieces of functionality or don't work as expected. And not just Microsoft. I mean, the Apache 1.3.26, the initial distro of that, had problems. They fixed it quickly, and I never heard about it until somebody said, yeah, I downloaded the first one, and it hosed us up. So there's issues with that. If we ignore the attacks, the bandwidth costs continue to rise. Nothing gets done. Somebody needs to do something about this stuff. It takes resources, blah, blah, blah. Switching to Unix, I think, if you're already in the Microsoft world, is kind of a silly thing to think about. Costs way too much money. Training, things of that nature, would eat you alive. If we publish the IP addresses of these boxes, then any old black hat can come along and just, wow, they have a whole list that they could use to then point to grc.com and take them offline. Some people don't have a problem with that. I'm kidding, it's funny. The anti-worm, I don't agree with. You can't control it. It's eating up as much bandwidth as the worm was in the first place. Yes, it might quickly solve a problem, but I don't think it's the best way to do it. And of course, hacking the offender is illegal, right? Isn't it? Isn't that bad? Okay, so let's talk about the law now and how the law views this stuff. I say the law could consider it illegal. That's kind of a soft statement, right?
Yeah.
The law does consider it illegal. It is illegal. It's not that they consider it. So, I believe some provisions should be made to allow for the neutralizing of these attacking boxes. And I think it can be done in a responsible way with a consensus. I think we can develop a framework that will allow this to be done responsibly. And I'm not talking about if somebody pings your box, you hack them. I'm not talking about rooting them if they do a port scan. You know, I'm talking about readily identifying a definitive set of requests, packet structures, and we all know it's NMDA. People tend to turn this into, I think, a little bit more of an emotional argument than I think it needs to be. We know it's NMDA. We know that the attacking box is that box. People say you can spoof the IPs, but as we all know, a three-way handshake requires a valid IP. If it's a UDP-based worm that's going to come in and they can spoof it, well, then we won't have that be a valid worm that we use this technology for. What I think is interesting, and I don't know whether it's because regular everyday jury of your peers does not understand technology or not, but we're seeing physical law being applied to internet events. In the eBay versus Bidder's Edge case, eBay actually got an injunction against Bidder's Edge for using some bot technology to go in and enumerate data on eBay's site because they said they were trespassing. That's really an interesting concept to me, for a piece of code to be able to be trespassing on somebody else's machine. It worked. Right? So there's this application of physical law being done. It might be a good thing, it might be a bad thing. I think self-defense might come into play here. Self-defense has some interesting provisions in it that we might be able to use. So I'm saying that if we can't use self-defense, I think we should be able to. Please. Now, many of you might think this is after eating chicken wings at Cafe Largo downstairs. But in fact, this is, and I thought it was just a funny image at first, until CNN covered it. In South Africa, they are deploying this device for people who attempt to hijack cars. The guy walks up to the car, you know, "Get out, I'm taking your car." "Oh yeah?" I'm serious, the chief of police has ordered one. That, to me, is an extreme measure to defend yourself. But I mean, maybe the situation dictates it down there. Maybe the number of hijacks require people to be flame-thrown. They call it the blaster. Please. Okay. I'm going to read a little bit of law here, just so as we can get some pretense. According to Black Law Dictionary, the source that I had, self-defense is the protection of one's person or property against some injury attempted by another. You can all read that. I'm not going to read it to you. But the part that I think is interesting, one who is not the aggressor in an encounter is justified using a reasonable amount of force against his adversary when he reasonably believes that he's in immediate danger of unlawful bodily harm. I'm going to assume that the bodily harm can also be applied to property in the language above. I know, but I can do that. I'm a tech guy, I'm not a lawyer. From his adversary, and that the use of such force is necessary to avoid the attack. Well, some interesting language there. It's personal property, and it's clear that I can use force against somebody if they're attacking me. Please. What is reasonable force? That degree of force which is not excessive and is appropriate in protecting oneself or one's property. When such force is used, a person is justified and is not criminally liable, nor liable in tort. That's a powerful statement, right? I intend to use that powerful statement to my advantage. Okay. Lastly, and I'm not, you know, again, don't get too much bogged down in law. This is read to jurors in California if somebody claims self-defense. It's lawful for a person who's being assaulted to defend him, herself from attack if, as a reasonable person, we have the grounds for believing and do believe that bodily injury is about to be inflicted. Yes, this is bodily injury, and again, I'm applying my property thing. Please.
What property are you defending?
Repeat your question. The question was, what property am I defending? Yes, it's my bandwidth, it's my machines, it is the resources of my machines,
data.
The data, the integrity of my machines, the availability of my services to my clients. All of that is my property. All of that is being threatened. Right? I mean, and that's not really, there's not much of an interpretation of that. I mean, these things are being used and I'm the one paying for them. Yes, sir. Well, I don't know if this intent, two things. The question is, why can't we do the same thing for spam? I do.
Just kidding.
I think the difference is that the intent of the spam isn't to compromise our machine. The intent of NMDA is to compromise the machine. Yes, ma'am. Well, so the comment there is that nowhere else in the statute does it mention property, and that if that's what they meant, that's what they would say. But why did they say it in the first place then? The first line of the of it says, you know, person or property. Go ahead.
I wonder if you could make your argument if you were defending a hospital system upon which lives depended. Or electric utility systems upon which hospitals.
I think it would certainly be more of we would have a much more pressing. I mean, if what I did, well, let's get to what the I'll take a couple more, and then let's have some really rich dialogue about this after we see what the whole thing is. These guys first, then you, and then we'll do. Yes, sir.
Anti-Texas law is specifically allowed to shoot somebody to prevent it from stealing property. Somebody taking the wrong on that. And there's a case after case where recruits have returned guilty verdicts.
Right. And that's where reasonable force comes in. In South Carolina, I don't even have to know anyone. If I am over here and a man attacks another, any of you, and any reasonable person would view that as a threat to that person, and to a degree that, and this is, you know, I don't like the life versus death application to what we're going to do, because we don't kill the machine. We'd like to kill the administrator sometimes. You know, but yeah, I don't have to know the person. If I see it, I go, oh man, that guy's going to kill them. Pow! Yes, sir. Well, if I'm wearing a bulletproof vest, it doesn't mean that I think people should be able to shoot at me.
No.
It's actually a very good point. It was a little crass for me to respond like that. And the question is, I'm not vulnerable, so doesn't that kind of preclude my ability to claim self-defense? That might be the case, but we have to remember that I have systems, processes, and bandwidth that are being utilized. You know, NMDA will attack, and this is in a thing here, NMDA will attack on the same subnet about 75% of the time on a B-class before it jumps net and goes after some other random box, which means that I stand to be hammered for a continuous period of time if a couple of other people on my subnet get it. You know, they're all just sitting there. You know, I've seen 10% of my bandwidth utilized by this stuff. And at what point do we say, well, I mean, it costs me money. I mean, you know, it's my bandwidth. All right, one more, and then we'll move on. Yes, ma'am. Oh, I told, let me, yes, sir. And then I promise one more.
So you could probably use the new bill that's coming out, running the Hollywood Hacker Bill, that would allow you to hack back if you're in violation of the NSA.
You know, no, it'd allow us to hack back at them for hacking back at us. I don't think you could use, I don't know, that's a crazy bill.
It is a crazy bill.
The comment was that I could use the new RAII, RIIA, whatever, CRAZY bill that's come out in order to justify this. That's particularly to stop people from copyright infringement. But I mean, that's what the law was in place for in the first place. You go after those people legally. You don't attack, I mean, you know, the next thing they'll be doing is walking up and taking away my MPEG player in the airport. Okay. Yeah, we talk, yeah, that's a big problem. That's one of the hurdles that we're going to have to... The question basically comes down to a question of international law. Something that somebody smarter than me is going to have to figure out. Now, I do want to say, you know, I'm postulating over here. Mark, right? Do you mind if I say who you are and kind of put you on the spot? Mark is an attorney with the Department of Justice. Correct? So, obviously, his interpretation of law is going to be far more accurate than mine. Feel free to throw the good stuff at me. Okay.
You have all the rope you want.
Okay. Okay. All right, so here are the facts. Here are the facts in the matter. The process intends to compromise our system. That's what it does. We all know that. Anyone who looks at it, anyone who's had anything to do with it, knows that there's not a damn thing good coming out of it. No redeeming factor at all. We know it's a worm. We know that it intends to compromise us and then use us to compromise somebody else and so on and so forth until it can't do it anymore. And even if it can't do it anymore, it's still going to try. It'll continue to attack until we stop it, or they stop it, or somebody fixes it or patches it. It's not going to stop. We know that. The attack, I already told you about the 75% of the time, that means it kind of aggregates itself over time if other boxes are compromised on the same subnet. So my costs will continue to rise. The costs are identifiable and measurable. I mean, a lot of the self-defense cases, it's like, well, I thought he was going to attack me. Well, how do you know? Well, he looked like it. You know, he sneered at me. So I shot him 19 times. These are identifiable. They're measurable. It's bandwidth. We can put our hands on it. I know how much a Cisco router costs. I know how much memory for that router costs, right? Yes, sir.
Well, you're talking from U.S. A significant portion of the internet is actually outside the U.S. We have a Supreme Court ruling norming saying that attempting to hack the system is not a crime. However, you succeed in your attempt, it becomes a crime. So thereby, Linda is not doing anything by which law as a crime to your system, but if you try to revert back again, you have actually succeeded doing something with the target system, you're committing a crime.
That's a good point. I won't go to Norway. The comment is that, and that's an interesting distinction, the comment is that, and you said Norway, right?
Yeah.
That the law is that if they attempt to hack you, that's not a crime. Hacking you isn't a crime. So, it's attempting to stab you is not a crime, it's only if they get gut, is that what the...
That's not quite so. Because
right, because it's still assault. Right, well here, I believe it's the same. I mean, if I throw the GET requests out there and try to do directory traversal, I haven't committed a crime. Once I root the box, I have. Is that similar?
Oh, no. Attempt is punishable to the exact same extent.
That's kind of... Thank you. Good night. And yes, the effect is worldwide, and that's a problem. But, I mean, I don't think we just say, okay, well, screw it. The next internet worm that comes along, we're just going to bend over and take it. You know? I mean, I think there's a way for us to address this responsibly. No redeeming value, blah, 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 we know that. And this will happen again. A worm will happen again. They're going to get more and more complex. Nimna is actually very complex. I mean, it had a number of attack vectors, email, web, open shares. I wouldn't be surprised if the next one is multi-OS.
But isn't that the argument against your case? I mean, if I'm vulnerable to a technology that's not existent yet, and I get hit, and I strike back...
You wouldn't be the one getting hit, right?
I may be striking back at an innocent.
Well, we're going to identify who that target is. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Okay. So our goals are to stop the attack against us, stop the attack against others, notify the administrator, stop future attacks from the same machine, and maybe at some point fix the box. That's kind of dangerous, though. I hesitate actually patching your box. I don't hesitate stopping the attack from your box, but I hesitate loading code on your box that will disrupt the file system, ruin evidence, disrupt forensic capabilities, you know, and possibly break something in the process. As we said before, you know, loading a patch will break other stuff. Long term, we can implement a framework for this. We can identify acceptable strike back methods, the same way that self-defense works now. If the guy sneers at me and I shoot him and kill him, well, I go to jail. You know, I say it's self-defense. They go, no, it's not. Bye. Okay? We can identify this stuff. We know what NIMDA was. We know what Code Red was. We'll know what the ensuing worm from David Litchfield next door, whenever people discover the UDP 1434 error and use that. We're going to know what that looks like. And that's UDP. Depending on how they write it, we might be in trouble. We might not be able to apply something like this. There are a lot of arguments against it, but I think whenever we boil it down to really what the root of the problem is, that this will solve a large percentage of these attacking boxes. Yeah, there might be somebody sitting behind a proxy, okay. There might be some kid doing it on purpose to try to get me to try to hack back somebody else. Granted, it won't work. We just stop. But yeah, that could happen. But we all know what the truth of it is, that these boxes have been, you know, this worm has been propagating on the internet, and it doesn't have to be. Okay. And I want to gain some legal support. Some of the things we talked about doing are to, I mean, you know how mad you get. You're like, son of a bitch. You know? Just shut them down. Well, that's drastic. That's not reasonable for us. That's an emotional response to something that doesn't need to be. It's expensive to the host company. Granted, it might not be that guy's fault, but I mean, we don't have to make their website, you know, we don't have to shut down Compaq or something like that, .com. Not that we would. We don't have to, you know, take their box offline. But that's the one way to do it. Remote patch. It is a complex operation. We could do it. We could tell that box to start downloading the patch from Symantec in this case, and not because Symantec box Security Focus, and I write for Security Focus, but we could have it download the patch from Microsoft. But again, I think it's way too complex, and it's too much. I don't have the right to do that. We could stop the publishing service. That would work with Code Red, but again, you know, where before, if we shut down the whole box, it could be an email server, Active Directory server, it could be all kinds of stuff, and then they're up a creek. If we just stop the publishing service, still, you know, that could damage a host's, it could cost them money. So here's what we're going to do. The first, there's two methods. With NIMDA specifically, the way that NIMDA works, the code of it, is that it instantiates a mutual exclusive object, right? And what it's called a mutex. The way that that works is that no other process in memory can use that same mutually exclusively named object. Okay? We're going to use that to our advantage here. The second option that we're going to explore is to block the outbound traffic at the port level. And that one's really pretty neat. In many cases, you know, our web servers don't have to make outbound calls to 80 unless we have some update service running. And if we had an update service running, we wouldn't have been vulnerable, so we wouldn't have gotten hacked and be attacking people. Right? Until .NET comes along, as somebody was telling me last night, and it needs to go out .80, out TCP 80 to talk to all the other servers. I mean, the first thing I went was, but, you know. So, the neat things about these, option one is Nimda specific. This is really very unobtrusive. It's the least invasive method. Right? All we're doing is stopping the worm. We're actually leaving the host infected. We're leaving the host infectious, but we're stopping the outbound attack. The file system stays in place. Forensics can be done after the fact. Services stay up. We actually restore functionality to the people, right? Because all their bandwidth isn't being utilized with the outbound attack. We don't have to patch. We don't have to clean. There's no undo that the people have to do. It does leave the host vulnerable, but it is easily removed. So I think there's a lot of merit to it. So here's how the name Mutex is going to work. The way we have this set up is this box that we're looking at the presentation on will be the inoculating box. It will have the neutralizing agent. I like those terms rather than the hack back and the attack real hard, you know. It's a neutralizing agent. It's attacking me, I'm stopping it, we're moving on. This is our Windows 2000 server that the administrator set up while it was plugged into the net before his first reboot has got Nimda, right? So we're also going to show you, I've got a box in the middle. Unfortunately, we only, you know, I'm going to have to unplug and plug in just to show you the traffic generated by the Nimda worm. So what's going to happen is the host is going to listen for the attack. It accepts the connection and verifies the attack signature. Is this a ping? No. Is this Nimda? Let's see. Come on. Ooh, yep. It's this request. It's this get request. It's this get request. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Nimda. Once it verifies that, it starts to log. It's actually logging all this activity anyway. Then it tries to verify the attack vector, and it'll only start the hack back if it can. If it fails, it bails. Well, we tried. I'm not going to, okay, damn it, I'm getting that guy, you know? I mean, this is how we're going to do it. We use the same attack vector that the worm does. So we're not introducing any new vulnerabilities, you know? If that's how they got it, that's how we're going to get them. We're going to load a tool, in this case, the IDQ DLL, which is just happens to put the IWAM and I user accounts in the administrators group. Yeah, that's the bad part. That's the part people don't like. Once we've done that, we're going to load the inoculation tool that creates the named mutex. Nimda is morphed, right? There's a Nimda A, there's a Nimda E. Nimda A has this named mutex. Nimda E actually uses two of them. So this will work on either one of those. Once we do that, with this method, I have to reboot the box. Oh, I know. I wish we didn't have to, but in this case we do. But before we do that, IWAM and IUser are removed. The DLL is removed. No backdoor left other than the initial attack vector, because I kind of hands off at that point. And then we leave some text behind so that people will know what happened. The second way, and this is only going to work on Windows 2000, but it's kind of elegant as well, I think, and can work globally, well, just about for any type of worm. The same sort of thing happens. We're going to pop the box, escalate privileges. We're then going to inject an IPsec rule to block the outbound port that the worm is using to attack us. Clean up, leave a README text, and get on with our lives. Yes, sir. Then the attack back wouldn't work. Then we would have failed on bail. So if somebody was behind a proxy or a NAT device.
So if you're blocking port 80, that box is not going to be able to make any connection in port 80, right? So all the users of that box are basically out of the port 80.
Well, but then they probably wouldn't have been attacking us in the first place, right? For an outbound port 80.
Really.
So explain what you're saying. If it was a
the server has.
If an infected box is behind a proxy?
No. The infected box is a proxy. Well, it's a small office. You have one server, one empty server. It has internet information server, and it has a proxy server.
Like proxy 2.0 or ISA.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now all these machines are just saying, well, it has like 10 users, small network, and they are all using that proxy to get out on the internet. And that machine happens to have been that, but after you do this, then all the users are pretty much disconnected.
That's true.
So, I mean, you're affecting systems that you don't really have control. And in the other method, the problem is that you're modifying the permissions of the user. If there is a little bug in your code, you're actually making it worse. Right?
Well, we remove it. Now, in the future version of it, and we just didn't have time to have this written. I didn't write it. J.D. Glosser wrote the IDQ DLL. I mean, I couldn't spell IDQ DLL. So, the future version of it is not going to use the privilege escalation in order to make the IWAM an IUser. The reason we do that is because we continue to call some, you know, we're using the URL. We're using those accounts to perform these functions, so we need some privilege escalation there. The future version of the tool, rather than, you know, we've gained privileges, rather than adding those users, then we would inject like the IPsec rule and then block the outbound, you know, block 80. But, I mean, if it's a proxy, I mean, I would have a hard time thinking that the proxy would then become infected with NMDA or code red, because it's not, it, I mean, unless it's also serving up website there. I mean, that's a valid. Well, I mean, and that's.
You don't have a network integrator. It's a single server that is doing all your functions. You're using it as your way to incorporate whatever.
Well, then they'll be notified pretty quickly then. And it's like, hey, it doesn't work. Why? Let's go to the server and find out. Oh, it says I have NMDA. Holy caca. Let's fix that. And they fix it and everything's okay. I mean, I understand that there are going to be extenuating circumstances. If it is the proxy and we do this, if it's the proxy and it's poppable, you know, I mean, I'm
saying you're going to have a really hard time to justify this.
I understand. That's what we're here to talk about. You know, at least, bless you, at least we have, you know, I want to discuss the possibility of this in an intelligent way. And, you know, the trick is that most of us, these people here and people of Black Hat, kind of represent a core of people who are at least security minded. You know, we come here to find out about security problems. So most of us probably are not really in a threatening position from NMDA and Code Red. I mean, who's vulnerable to Code Red? You know?
Right. But we are the people who fix it. So there's really not a lot of motivation for us to do that.
Fix your mic. Lost your mic.
Did I turn it off?
Hello? See, that's going to be later today after this guy gets hold of me, but... Okay. So, let's move on. All right, demo. Okay, these are my boxes. I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, a couple people said, you know they're going to arrest you, right? And I'm like, no, they wouldn't do that. Would they do that? They wouldn't do that. You wouldn't do that? Are you going to do that? All right. You have to tell me, right? If I ask you, you have to tell me, isn't that how it works in the movies? All right. That's right. I gave myself permission. Written. Okay. So. All right. So. Sorry. Okay. So how about log into the server, please? Somebody.
What's your password?
Oh, I'm not telling you. I'll tell you my password. You must be out of your mind. You guys don't look either. Don't tell anybody. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to set this guy up. Thanks, man. We're going to run a little Perl script. You know, I just recently could spell Perl correctly. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to stop that. When I tell you, get that guy listening. Let's open up a TFTP server just in case we need one. And we're going to go over here to this server. Are we up? Windows 2000 default installed. I'm going to infect it. NIMDA. This will simulate somebody coming in and popping the box remotely. So NIMDA loads a couple of pieces of itself. I'll just throw that up there. So are we ready? Yeah. How about do that? So what we're going to do now, this guy isn't listening yet, but if you look over at this monitor, you can kind of get a feel for how much traffic is generated from an attacking box. It takes NIMDA a minute to initialize because it's going through and looking for all the available vectors and open shares and things of that nature. But that other box we had sitting there in server mode starts throwing out ARP requests.
We're not in server mode yet.
What? I know. But I didn't want it to. It's very efficient. This is a modified version of NIMDA that scans just the subclass. It's a 10.1.1 address, but we're treating it as a C class. So this modified version of it, which we're going to put on the website for you guys to test, will... That's all. It's just research and development. So you can see all the traffic that's being generated. And it goes through the subnet, and it's actually pretty quick. So how about execute the script? So this guy's going to listen. It might take it a minute for it to actually hit this IP address, but I've got a couple of jokes prepared in case that's the case. Oh, too late. So what we do is now we got the request. We go through using some traversal. We put the files we need on there. We call the IDQ DLL. We've now escalated privileges on the... Oh, switch, switch, switch. Oh, good. You're good. Now it's going to sleep for a little while. It doesn't have to sleep this long, but the IDQ DLL, we wanted the thread to end so as we knew that the next call, that will be fixed. Actually, right now, the problem with that is if anybody else happens to go to this box and execute something, it'll be in system. Then that machine goes bye-bye. So what we've done is we've changed the boot sequence over here so that before NIMDA can run again, our mutex is going to load into memory. So when this box comes back up, no matter how many times they try to run NIMDA, they can't. The web server stays running. All the services are available. Anything else that that box was doing will be available. Okay? I consider this to be a not just reasonable, but like minimal force needed to get a box to stop attacking us. Yes, sir?
Is it likely that rebooting the box itself?
We reboot it one time?
Say there's a box that just arrived and it's in the shack.
You know, it could be, you know, but shooting somebody five times in the head, it could be justified. And that's what we're really here to talk about. I mean, what if it was your box and you were attacking other people and you didn't know it? And you're infecting other people's boxes and you're utilizing bandwidth. Would you mind that your box was rebooted? Or would you rather continue to be infecting everybody and attacking everybody? And causing people who don't do this the administrative overhead of contacting you, contacting your ISP, firing off emails and early blackholing your address.
How are you going to know?
How am I going to know what?
How are you going to know that that's what happened?
Oh, I'll show you. You can cash that check after the... Okay. When they log into the box, and there's other things that we can do. I mean, we could do, remember, we can do anything we want. I mean, we could send emails out, we could do a net broadcast to everybody and they say, hey, my God, this machine is infected, but we've saved you. But I mean, we, you know, we don't want to necessarily do that. It's Ryan from Security Focus. I'm not gonna... Hi, I'm the NIMDA inoculator. See, it's very pleasant and friendly. I've been installed because your computer is infected with NIMDA, because you are a moron. Please take the appropriate steps, blah, 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 blah. So how about open a DOS shell on that guy and then run NIMDA a couple of times, please? Hey, it's like it knew. Okay, and if you would be so kind as to switch to the sniffer. Now he's waiting again. If the administrator walks up to that box and goes, screw it, closes that program, NIMDA's going to start up again. But I'm not going to do anything else to him over here. I mean, I've done my thing. I've got his IP. We know what's happened. These results have been, we know that we have successfully stopped him from attacking us. If he starts to do it again, we're going to take some other venue. Yes, ma'am. I'm startled. I can't hear real well. Van Halen and the Vega back in the 80s. And... Correct.
Then, given that it's likely to have hit several machines before yours, probably many thousands, if one of those is logging vulnerable machines to use in the future, then doesn't this actually make it more dangerous? Because if the machine's going off and attacking, then sooner or later, you'd hope that the ISP or somebody's going to go to them and say, oi, sort it out and turn it off. If it's no longer attacking, but it is vulnerable, then doesn't that mean that it's more likely to be used in the future as a staging post?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's more likely. I mean, so the question is, if we do this, it stops advertising the fact that it's infected with NIMDA, yet it is, and that the conditions exist that would allow this box to be infected again. Doesn't that, in fact, make that box somewhat more vulnerable to somebody who might go back through their logs? I mean, I don't think so. One, we're going to notify the administrator. And that notification is going to be, all right, so let's now Kind of fast forward a little bit to where we're having intelligent dialogue about implementing a framework for this sort of thing to exist. So we're going to identify NMDA as a threat that warrants neutralizing in this manner. I'm not saying that we're necessarily the ones who get to do that. I mean, sticking a box like this on a Class A somewhere could have a lot of success. So I think what we would do is, once it stopped attacking us, there could be a framework in place to notify the administrator in a different way, via email, via contact, or what have you. I bet you're much more likely to get a response from someone that says, you had NMDA, since your box was attacking us, you know, in pursuant to article blah of blah, you know, we took minimum force required to clean your box, you're still infected, you should do your job. You know, I think something like that would be in place. But I mean, I think it's a lot better to do this and stop the box from advertising than it is to allow it to continue to eat up our bandwidth and let somebody else who has malicious intent store those addresses and then compromise the box for their own purposes. Because that's what's being done. People wait for this, they know the box is vulnerable, and they'll fix it and the administrator will never know. They never know they had it in the first place, now they don't know that they've been rooted. So, hold one sec, let's get to where we can ask all those questions. Can you bring that slide back up? Hit the little, you know the secret button. Okay. Next. Okay, considerations. It's like I knew you were going to say that. Proxied attacks. You know, yeah, we're going to have to make some allowances for how this is going to work. People behind a NAT device. And the thing is that we would try to attack back the, neutralize, we would try to neutralize the NAT box and it would fail. Fails, we bail. We log it, and then we move on. And then maybe, you know, where I think the real value of this is like at outbreak stage, right? I mean, imagine if something, all the other stuff aside and all of the emotional aspects of this aside, we all paid the price for Code Red and NMDA. So if something like this was in place early warning, everybody would have benefited. So, we need to define what an attack is. We also need to define what an acceptable defense is, what an acceptable method of striking back is. And this can be from consensus. You know, I think we've illustrated a minimal force used to stop the attack, you know, and I think similar types of technology can be used. Future worms, you know, international law is a big consideration. What if it's a Chinese box that attacks us? A new friend of mine today was telling me about, you know, we can't have a law that's going to allow us to strike back against a Chinese box. So I say, do it anyway. Okay, so now let's get to some, you know, some of the discussion part. Yes, sir.
You say that you can't have privilege escalation.
Well, the privilege that I'm going to take out the privilege escalation. I'm going to take out the process of putting IUser and IWAM in the administrators group. We will still use privilege escalation to inject or load the mutex file at that point. It's just that singular process will perform all of those things rather than, in this case, having to gain access to the box and then once I have it, then load the mutex. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I'm just curious, how ethical is it to put code out there that has those privileges?
Oh, well, it's already out there. The question was, how ethical is it to put code out there that has those privileges? I mean, really what we're going to, I mean, the code's already out there. Most of, most of you guys don't have it. But I mean, if that code is out there, I think the future version of it would be much more ethical than me having, like, if I put this version up on the website and that IDQ DLL is there, well, script kiddie's dream. They're going to pop any box that's vulnerable, but they can do it anyway. So that's why I want to remove that functionality from it. So as my tool will be very, very singular. It will be designed for NMDA or for the blocking of the outbound port that's doing the attacking. In which, in most cases, it's best practices anyway for our web servers not to make outbound 80 calls, right? It's best practices for SQL Server not to make a 1433 outbound call. I'm going to go around in a circle. So,
rather than taking the benefit of self-defense, think of it as your system is your dog, the attacking system is another dog, it's rabid.
There's a lot of interesting, he's saying, rather than thinking of it as self-defense, look at it like a good dog, bad dog kind of analogy. And I think a lot of that would fit. I just haven't found a legal analogy that would necessarily hold any water. Now, does this hold any water at all, the self-defense thing?
I typically not, because I sort of disagree with the premise that you can extend defense from bodily injury to include an asserted injury to property. The body law that I think is arguably analogous here is nuisance law. The guy next to you suddenly, he builds something in his yard, starts spewing soot and powder, and it's like it's covering your house, it's covering your rose bushes, it's doing unpleasant things, it is harming your property. You do not have a right under U.S. law to go over and either shut down his device, or tune it, or install filters, or whatever it is that you want to do to make it stop polluting your property. The remedy that you have, I think it's very interesting that you mentioned the Bitter's Edge case, because we have legal constructs, and the legal constructs, better or worse, usually involve bringing in the attack lawyers, maybe not suing somebody, but you mentioned these are near subnets, so
right.
They're going to be in your jurisdiction, you can actually get at them for law, and maybe just write a letter. I actually kind of think that a few good test cases where people are made examples of, where they've been told you're infected with NMDA, they fail to take action, and then they get sued, and then you've said, you feel like you're damaged, it's costing you bandwidth, you've got administrative costs, you can cover all that. You can make them even money.
I just don't think that scales well. And I understand what you're saying on a case-by-case basis, but we're talking about hundreds of thousands of machines. And in the interim, we're talking about the capability of, some serious damage to the infrastructure. So, and this is what I enjoy. This is the kind, some rich dialogue about, what about this and what about that, but not the stuff like, oh, you're pinging me, I'm going to hack you back, stuff like that. Hold on, I said this gentleman over here. Yes, sir.
Maybe this is why I'm not in management, but I would just comment that perhaps in doing this, you could say me as the CEO of, let's say, a major firm like IBM or Microsoft or something like that, a lot of embarrassment. Because if this didn't happen and it went on for a while, it got into the press. Hey, this fellow CEO of this company has his servers affected with NMDA. He has, blocked OC5s out to the internet. Big bad company is not taking out my files.
That's certainly it's attractive to be, I'm attracted to that kind of justification. But I still think, I think if our basis is I'm doing a good thing for people, kind of justification, if that's what I'm using as my justification from a moral and ethical standpoint, I think there's at some point it's a gray area. You know, this might be, yes, I'm doing a great thing, and everybody thinks I'm doing a great thing. But if the circumstances change a little bit, you're a lot closer to doing a bad thing. That's why I'm more concerned with having some legal basis that we can point to, and some statute, and some, you know, this is good because of this reason, and here's some case law, and blah, blah, blah. But you certainly would. You could say, and you not only save the people the embarrassment, you know, you're saving other machines that are vulnerable. I was going to get him, and then I'll get you guys, and I'll move over that way.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
I'm also not a lawyer, but...
But you're a CISSP.
That's the best.
Oh, no, it's a... What's that stand for, anyway?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
If I remember it, there are laws, actually, that do establish liability if somebody does not secure their network adequately and they end up hacking you. And, I mean, with a lawsuit, presumably, if there was a case where somebody was made an example of, you know, you have that establishment of some definite liability there, that is going to be motivation for companies. Like it'll come down to the CEO and the CFO. Hey, you guys better take care of this because we don't want to get sued.
Well, you know, my only problem with that, and I understand, and I think theoretically that's true.
It does.
Oh, I'm sorry. The question was that he thinks that there is law that's in place that allows people to be held responsible if they don't secure their networks adequately, they attack me and do damage. Then I can take that person to court and do something like that. I mean, I guess I'm kind of, I want the best of both worlds. I want some legal basis for this while being able to bypass the legal red tape. Right? Which probably isn't fair. But, I mean, my only issue is that typically legal remedies, you know, are limited to people who have just either a lot of time and money or like a really good case. I mean, who's been sued for NIMDA? Right? I mean, I would think that if it was a viable means of doing something, we already would have seen it in a year. Yes, sir?
Yeah, just to sort of, you know,
I'm sorry, there's no contradiction allowed here.
Most people here have heard of the Intel v. Hamidi case, this email case, you know, former Intel employee, it's out on appeal now in California.
Isn't Jennifer Granick involved with that?
Yes, they're getting ready to file a brief out of her.
I knew that, I was just kind of kidding.
I mean, there's an example where Intel has gone out of its way. Intel's kind of big, so they have, you know, they're flush, you know, dot com business is booming, you know, everybody's got money to burn. They're throwing money at this guy to make him stop sending email into their network, where I think arguably there are probably some technical measures they can undertake that would cost them a lot less money. So there are companies that are willing to go out and spend some money on the attack lawyers in order to make a point. And I think that's an example.
Well, and that might, right, I mean, you know, but I want to be the pole man's friend, you know, I just want to, you know, I mean, I think, so yeah, I mean, I think there's arguably a lot that would have to happen here, you know, but I mean, I think, and that's kind of like how self-defense is now, it kind of made its way, I mean, I'm sure before self-defense was self-defense, that, you know, people were thinking about how that could be made into a law, and other people were saying, well, man, that's going to be abused. Somebody's going to say that they were just attacked by him, and, you know, somebody's going to shoot somebody to kill him and say that they attacked him. You know, so, I mean, I'm sure we'll have the same sort of problems. And as far as the intel, I reserve judgment until there is a ruling on that case.
Oh,
has there?
Damn it.
All right, we only got 5 minutes. There's a couple of... you. Yes, sir.
One point that I think is a way around a lot of the challenges of getting a new law passed or any kind of legal enabling is to bring pressure to bear for people to opt into a system where I say, yeah, I want you to monitor my network at the Class A ISP level, and if you see this crap coming out of my network, take it down. And with
with IP6. God, bring us that quickly, please.
Well, and you know what? So the question is that people should be able to opt in to asking for assistance with this sort of stuff. I think that's already know what you're talking about before you need what you need mindset, though. I mean, because if you already think that you need help, you probably are already at the presence of mind that you can install a service pack. Can we go forward? There's a couple of people. Are you on the phone? In addition to Keith and Ryan, I want to thank Blue Boar, who helped me with my coding, some technical guidance and research, JD Glosser, who did some technical guidance, things that I enter, Jeremiah Grossman, who had the outbound port idea, which I thought was great. JD is doing the new fire and water tools, which are outstanding. Jeremiah wrote White Hat Sex Arsenal, which is great. Jennifer Granick, who gave me some legal opinions and consultation. And Jennifer's great. I don't know if you know Jennifer or not, but I'd break a law just to get her to defend me, if you know what I mean. Say what? Right. Blaine Kubesh, I have no idea who he is, but he's the one who told me about, you know, if you do a name mutex before NIMDA does, it won't run. And Scott Culp, who was also, he's with some security company, who had some opinions and feedback for me too. So I want to make sure I thank those people. Actually, I want to thank you guys for coming out and at least talking about this, and no one's thrown an apple at me yet, so that's pretty good. Okay, so a few questions now. When the time's up, you guys can run, but I mean...
I got a point to add very quickly. There's a feedback system up. The IP address is 172.16.0.2. I know everybody already knows about this feedback system, but put some discussion in there. And I've got a stack of books up here for everybody who is adding feedback and proving to me that they did it. Just show me that you logged out of the feedback system, and I'll give you, I have the first four people up here, like, starting now. So.
All right, so anybody else, thank you very much. If you guys want to leave, if you want to stay here and us hash this out, that's great. So, who did I say was going to be next over here? Anybody? Yes, sir. Oh, you're not. That's not a question. Over there. All right, just give me a couple minutes. Yes, sir. Okay, just two. Can I have two questions?
Sure.
Okay, I can run faster than those people. Yes, sir.